Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 695, December 2023.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I'm your host, Jason Snell. This is an episode sort of, it's our holiday episode, I think. I think that's what we'll call it. I have decided it will be a draft, and I have decided that it will be a draft of toys. What are the rules of the toy draft? The only rule is that there are no rules of the toy draft. Let me introduce our panelists who are going to draft toys, whatever that means. The movie toys? Sure, if you want to. Monty might do it, but we'll get to him in a minute. I'm going to read, introduce all these people in the order in which the random.org website told me to introduce it, because I do everything random.org says. Shelley Brisbane will pick first. Hi, Shelley.
Hello, I'm brought to you by Whammo.
Excellent work. Lisa Schmeiser will pick second. Hi, Lisa.
Hello. I have no witty toy slogans. Okay. I wasn't allowed to watch TV as a child.
There's 10 people on this podcast, so that's just fine. Callie Gamont is also here. Hello.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Moises Chuyan is here. Hello. He'll pick fourth.
I'm looking forward to all of the rules and respecting all of them.
Great. David J. Lohr, fifth.
I will not be picking all of Barry Levinson's toys. Just Robin Williams.
Okay. You got how many picks? Well, there's 10 people, so probably not very many. Chip Sutterth is also here picking sixth. Hello, Chip.
Where does he get those wonderful toys? I got a catchphrase in.
Good job. Actually, higher than you would expect, because I'm convinced random.org doesn't like him. Monty Ashley is picking seventh. Hello.
Hi. Are we out of time yet?
Almost. But before
I'm sorry, there isn't time.
Philip Michaels is picking after Monty. Hi, Phil.
So I want to clarify some of these rules that I've heard so much about.
Yep.
What about misfit toys? Are misfit toys acceptable?
Yes. Yes.
Only if you were on an island at the time.
Who wants a Charlie in the box? Oh, I tell you.
Yeah, that's true. Annette Weirstra will pick next to last. Sorry, Annette.
That's okay, but just remember, batteries not included.
And I, as your host, will pick last, but not least, because there are so many toys out there, so many toys for us to choose from, and now we're going to pick them, because again, that's it. That's the whole concept. I thought, hey, we've run out of ideas. I have run out of ideas for holiday episodes. What can we do? And I thought, toy draft. Let's just do it. It's on my list of possibilities. Let's do it. Let's see what happens. I don't know what will happen. And it sounds a little bit like I don't care what will happen. It might be true. I just think good things will happen. And that's all that matters. Shelley, you're up, starting our first round of the inimitable, classic, never to be duplicated, probably incomparable toy draft.
For safety reasons.
The
first annual, inimitable, never to be repeated.
I was going to say, I was not going to say first annual. I knew somebody would eventually.
It's inaugural.
Yes.
Okay,
we've done
it's
this.
Inaugural. Soon, Hail to the Chief will play, and there will be bands and parades and all sorts of things.
Pardon the turkeys now before they rise up against you.
That's right. Well, despite the fact that I don't expect to have more than a couple of picks, I have chosen a theme for the evening. I actually chose two, and at the last moment, I've picked the one that I will use. I'll tell you about that later. But my toy is the Easy Bake Oven, because in fact, you can make things that are delicious with an Easy Bake Oven. There was one in my home. It was not mine, but it was there, and I was actually surprised at how big it was when it arrived on Christmas morning for not me. And you make these little tiny cakes that are, you know, like 4 inches in diameter, but it takes a very large plastic white appliance to do that, which for some weird reason got to live in our bedroom, my sister's bedroom and mine, and I will just always remember that giant Easy Bake Oven taking up a lot of space, but I enjoyed it. Chocolate cake when you're 10 is fun.
So was it was it co-branded with something, or was it just its own brand, the Easy Easy Bake?
The
oven?
One we had was just its own. I think they might have done co-brandings at some point. But
I think there was a Betty Crocker co-branding at one point.
Oh, you know, you may be right. Because I think it came with a couple of little boxes of cake mix, right? And they probably
did.
It did also shift from company to company over the years. So.
Hot inside information. When Harry Potter came out, Hasbro pitched, we want the toy line. And one of the things they pitched was Easy Bake Cauldron.
Oh.
Oh, wow. Oh, man.
Loved having an Easy Bake Cauldron.
That would have been a new generation of children with singed fingers. I love
it. Exactly. So, the Easy Bake Oven, now correct me if I'm wrong, too. I believe the heat source was just a light bulb.
It was a light bulb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The bulb was below and very, I can't remember what wattage it was. I was trying to remember. They were fairly small bulbs, but a decent wattage. And it was below, and you had a little rack that, you know, cooked the little cake that you had right above it. And so, and it was very bright as well. So because they didn't shield the bulb, you know, visually. So it's this big white thing with a big white bulb in it. And I can't remember how long it took. Didn't take very long to cook because kids are impatient. But beware of the light bulb, because that'll burn you.
Where do you even get an incandescent bulb in this day and age to put in a toy for a Harry Potter movie?
They still make them
in.
For inside ovens, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put in a plastic LED bulb.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
That's right.
Yeah.
I am amused by the idea that a toy for you to have fun with, and the fun to be had was making tiny cakes.
Labor.
Like, how is that not adorable?
It's the thrill of being able to eat snacks in your bedroom.
It's true.
Exactly.
It's true. You make your own snacks.
That's what one of the things I remember most about it. I remember knowing my mother as I do, I did not expect that she would allow my sister to keep it in her bedroom. And she did. And that was like the joy for me. And I was like, can I make one now? Can I make one now? And
we're getting away with something. Oh, my gosh.
All right. Yeah. The Easy Bake Oven is the first pick in the inimitable, inaugural, never-to-be-repeated,
interminable,
incomparable toy draft. Lisa Schmeiser, it's your choice. What is your toy draft selection?
The old school 1970s style Play School bristle blocks.
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Nice.
This is going to definitely be like a reference lost on younger listeners. for the uninitiated, these were a set of brightly colored plastic blocks. You had one giant cube and a bunch of small cubes and different lengths of rectangles and wheels. And they were basically like the shapes were kind of surrounded with little soft plastic spikes. And thus, they could interlock or mesh, and you could make like crazy vehicles or weird houses or funky people. But it was also a toy where it was really satisfying to play with it with something else. Like, I loved pressing bristle blocks into clay to make patterns or like silly putty and then, you know, use the resultant gross textures to wrap around my Barbies. It really is what they call like an open-ended play toy. And I believe the bristle block brand has gone through multiple acquisitions, but if you can get your hand on some of the OG 1970s ones, they hold up really well and they're still really fun to make stuff with.
Mm-hmm.
I have no experience with this at all, I think. This is unfamiliar to me at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had them in our kindergarten class. Hmm. Those in Lincoln Logs.
Because we had these little interlocking styrofoamy blocks, but I don't think that's what you're talking about, something that's a little has more kinds of pieces. Because the ones I remember just interlocked and they were rectangular blocks with like three things on top that interacted with the holes on the bottom of the next one.
No, they're like, what if someone took hedgehogs and made them geometric and primary colored?
Like, yeah, they clung to each other kind of
like Velcro.
Velcro.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I remember these. They're like the hook side of hook and loop, aka Velcro. Yeah.
Thank you, Etsy, for calling them vintage and antique playsets, as I'm looking at.
But what was interesting about like the little rectangles and the squares is you'd have one row, you'd have one double row of the little pegs or spikes on one side and then a single row on the other. And that way you could interlock the different pieces. And my gosh, it was a great day when I discovered you could also interlock them at 90 degree angles in addition to just straight up and down. They were fun.
They were also good brushes for your other toys.
Oh, nice.
You could use them to brush Barbie for sure. Like the long skinny yellow blocks would have been great for that.
With like the one or two rows on the rectangle. Yeah, those were the ones.
can make your own fun with Play School Prison Blocks. All right. Very nice. Let's move on to Kelly Gamond. What's your pick?
I have something that honestly, even though only two people ended up ahead of me, I'm really surprised did not get picked previously to my opening, and that is the Speak and Spell, that giant orange slab of plastic and that mechanical voice. And I had one I loved so, so much. It went everywhere that I was allowed to have it with me, which means I wasn't allowed to take it to church, but otherwise it pretty much went every place else except the bathtub. I loved it so much that, in fact, when I was an older person and discovered that there was a record in the world that was called Speak and Spell, I bought it, and that's how I became a huge Depeche Mode fan. So, I loved this toy so, so much as a kid, went through so many 9-volt batteries, and I just thought it was the greatest thing when I was a kid. So, you know, it's really not all that surprising that I ended up sitting in front of other screens and other things that tell me what to do now. But
it was my first experience with a computerized text-to-speech, right? Where there was an actual device that, that had that computer voice that would be like N-B-L-E in this very weird kind of aggressive robot voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
It was the first educational toy that I ever got angry with. I was a precocious
first of many?
Kid. As a precocious kid, I spelled mustache with an O. But there weren't enough letters in it, so
okay, Niles Crane.
And it said mustache without an O, and I was mad.
Ooh,
no, you were right, Chip.
Yeah. I don't think people are picking it because most of us know how to speak, and also mostly spell.
That's wild, true.
I don't need that toy anymore. I still need the oven. I've got to eat, man. But I don't need to know.
And those little blocks, of course, come in real handy too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cleaning things.
I want the 21st century version. The speak and autocorrect, where you speak in the middle.
There's a
Martha.
There were periods of time based on the vagaries of school bus schedules. And I think piano lessons, where I was sometimes on the school bus for a very long time. And I have very distinct memories that there was this girl who lived, you know, 25 minutes into the ride, and she had a speak and spell on the bus. And I just had this really memory of being completely blown away by the speak and spell for that 25 minute duration before she got off the bus. And the very high quality, yellow and orange color scheme on top of it. Yeah. I mean, it was a time. It was a very particular time.
Honestly, I'm surprised. Blue. Yeah. A little bit of blue. I'm surprised and maybe it exists and I just haven't seen it, that somebody didn't make something like this as like an iPad app where you push on the buttons and it reads to you in that weird flat, but yet also aggressive robot voice. Yeah,
maybe.
So, yeah. It
may exist. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Speak and Spell, a classic. It's in the archive now or whatever we're calling this thing. Moises, it's your turn. What do you have?
I'd like to break us into an area of toys that we haven't touched yet. That was a big deal to me as a kid who grew up in the 80s and 90s. And that is action figures. And in recent years, action figures have taken leaps and bounds forward with the help of all kinds of computer guided stuff, 3D printing, automation, where you can go to the store and for $25, you can get something that has honestly a pretty realistic likeness of a movie actor that just played them in some movie that everybody is waiting until it hits Disney Plus to see. There are forebears to these toys, pioneers, if you will. I was born in the year that Return of the Jedi came out. I have selected a toy that came out the year before I was born, but because of the way that waves of action figures worked, they didn't turn over every 6 months like they do now. You could get it 5-6 years later, they were still producing these things, especially when they were part of an incredibly, incredibly popular franchise. And no, I'm not talking about Wondar, the Wonder Bread mail order special toy that was really just a repainted He-Man. But instead, because I couldn't get the original He-Man, I could only get Battle Damage He-Man by the time I was collecting these. You know who I could get from the first wave of Masters of the Universe action figures from 1982? Skeletor.
Oh, no. I saw that coming.
Oh, yeah.
I chose this not just because, look, this is a festive episode. We're celebrating the incomparable. We're having fun with friends. Mm. But really, this was one of my favorite, most foundational early toys. Because even though they were reprinting from the same mold and just repainting a lot of the same body parts on all the male figures, this guy was spooky. This guy was weird. This guy, my mom didn't know if I should be allowed to have this toy because he has a skull for a face and
somewhat demonic. Could be
my
a
mom
bad
had
influence.
The same debate. Yeah, when my brother wanted one really badly.
Too scary.
Yeah.
Not wholesome.
There are those who say that He-Man is his enemy, but that number definitely includes me. It's not that Skeletor is He-Man's enemy; it's He-Man is Skeletor's enemy. And now I've said it, so now it's there for time immemorial.
Yeah,
yeah.
Skeletor action figure. For a second, I thought you were going to take all of Star Wars figures, but no.
I stated in Slack before we started. I'm not picking.
You're not going to be that guy.
I'm not going to be that guy. I'm not going to be that guy.
All right. David, it's your turn to be maybe that guy, maybe a different guy. What do you have? Is it all of dolls?
Well, as tempting as that is, I am going to go into action figures, though.
Good.
And this actually...
Dolls for boys, as
well,
we used to call
it. Well, this literally was, you know, the core of this was the argument, are action figures dolls? Mm-hmm. Yes, they're totally dolls.
Of course.
Because this... What I'm going to pick is the Mego 1973 edition, 73-74, Mr. Scott from Star Trek, because...
Okay.
That's pretty specific.
It is very specific. There's a reason.
Specifically.
Chip is our designated noter of specificity.
So Chekhov is still on the board then.
Yeah. Chekhov is totally still on the board. You know why? Because there is no 1973-74 Chekhov figure. They never made Sulu and Chekhov.
Don't I feel like an
Chekhov's
ass?
Chekhov's action figure doesn't exist, is what you're saying?
It doesn't exist. He doesn't go off until Act 3.
He just sits there. He doesn't do anything. Sulu does something. But Chekhov, come on.
They did finally make them like 3 or 4 years ago because Mego is back in business after decades. But the reason I picked Mr. Scott is because, and we published an article on this in Glenn's magazine way, way back. When I was little, one Christmas, my grandparents got me Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Uhura, and the Enterprise playset. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't find Mr. Scott. Because they made fewer Mr. Scotts than any of the others. And I can give you a link to that story because it is a story. All these years, Mr. Scott has been my rosebud, my white whale. Mm. When I go to toy conventions, when I go to collectibles and hobby stores, that's what I look for. And I have seen him. I've seen the vintage 1973 edition.
Hi, Scotty!
You know, $400, and I'm not paying that, you know. So flash forward to 2 years ago. A dear friend of mine found one of the new edition Mego Scotties, which are from the original molds, right? And they're, considering it's the early 70s, they are pretty good likenesses of all the characters, all the actors. And I was so excited because, you know, my playset and action figures have been stored at my dad's house for all this time. And I call him up. I say, I finally have Mr. Scott. And he goes, what? I said, Scotty from Star Trek. He goes, yeah, I know Star Trek. What are you talking about? I said, now you can send me the playset and send me the figures because I can put them all together. I finally have the crew. And he goes, that was yours? And I said, and it was the end of Toy Story 3 all over again, except I didn't get to give them away. The only thing I had left from the doll museum in my childhood. He thought, years after my mother had passed away, he somehow forgot, having lived with us for years, somehow forgot that was mine and thought it was hers. And
And so he gave it to a friend for their child who loves playing with Star Trek. So there's a great gift of the Magi thing here that now, after all this time, I have Mr. Scott and I don't have any of the rest.
Oh, that's David.
So
I know, right? Right?
I'm shaken, honestly.
Wow, David, way to kill the mood.
I'm gonna reference now. That was a moment that is up there with, you have to go all the way back to episode, 16 of The Incomparable, when Dan tells the story about his beloved Transformer, and they stopped like by the side of the road or on a bridge or something.
Yes,
and he took it out of the car with him, and then he, I guess, set it on the side of the road as a, like as part of the play, and then got back in the car, leaving the Transformer there. It may be there still, playing with all of David's Star Trek action figures.
Some toy stories are sad stories.
Let me lift it up real quick. I had that same Enterprise bridge set and the figures that came with it. The best thing about that was the transporter gimmick, a rotating phone booth-like kind of thing that had a slot that you put the figure in. It was double-sided. You spun the dial really, really fast. The stickers on either side of the phone book would flash past, making it look like a transporter effect. You press a button, it stops on the other side, and it's empty.
They're gone. So I had, and I know I've told the story before, but I'll just do the short version of it here. I had Kirk and Spock action figures, the Mego action figures, which were much taller than you're thinking. They were
about 8 to 9 inches.
Yeah, I think they were 8 inches. They're more like dolls. They really were more like dolls.
Yeah,
and in fact, they were on the same scale as Barbie figures. And I say that because, of course,
almost.
I didn't have almost very close enough that although I never had the Enterprise playset, I did have the Tonka Indian Winnebago RV motorhome camper toy, which was made for Barbie. It was the Barbie Winnebago. And Kirk and Spock had all sorts of Winnebago adventures together, exploring strange new campgrounds.
Yeah, see, we had in the museum, like my grandmother, this is part of the story that's published, my grandmother bought me the gift and then wanted to put it in the museum where I could look at it.
Rude.
It would be with the contemporary figures, but you can look at it. My mother said, no, but she did have, a bunch of Barbies and G.I. Joes and sets and all that. And so I would take them over at play. And so that's how I know the relative sizes. So, yeah, but it totally worked. They would totally fit in the Barbie playsets.
The accessories, yeah.
Yeah, G.I. Joes fit as well, which I know because we had G.I. Joes and Barbies in my house. And the Barbies actually were slightly taller than the G.I. Joes, which I enjoyed. I like that the woman is like, maybe an inch taller or whatever, mm-hmm. half an inch maybe.
She's statuesque, really.
And we'd put them in the Barbie camper or beach house, beach bus thing that we had.
Good stuff.
And I am not picking him at all tonight, but I am looking at a 1972 G.I. Joe sitting across the office from me.
Okay, David's white whale, Mr. Scott. Everybody else is gone, but Scotty remains.
Okay.
It's on the board. Chip, it's your selection. What do you have?
All right. I'm continuing in this nostalgia world. I am picking a toy that I didn't have because my parents' house, my grandparents' house, gravel driveways. This was absolutely useless in a world of gravel driveways. But if I went to church or the playground and if somebody had it, if I hadn't a chance to play with it, I thoroughly leaped at the opportunity to tear across that basketball court or whatever and then pull the handle at the right rear wheel and spin out. I am speaking of the 1970s Big Wheel.
Yes!
Oh, the big wheel.
I can see the commercial even now.
Love the big wheel. I was entirely too big for it when I started riding it, which everybody told me. I was like, I don't care. I'm going to ride this. And I looked ridiculous.
And did you care? Not a bit.
No!
Right? Yeah.
The genius of the big wheel was that I'm convinced that they added this handle in the 1970s. Big wheel was created in 69. I'm convinced they added that handle in the early 70s as a safety feature. I don't know, a brake. And it doesn't break. It doesn't stop. It just creates this wild Fall Guy spin out kind of thing.
For those who don't know, the big wheel, but the big wheel is a little plastic tricycle. It's what it was. Molded plastic tricycle.
molded plastic but it's tricycle.
So cool. Yeah.
And very, very low to the ground.
Bright colors, low to the ground.
Extremely low. That yes. that just made it more risky because you could right. skim your hand along the asphalt. Yeah.
Baby's first chopper, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can tell you why the handle exists, because my big wheel didn't have one. And I used to put the pedals in the same place every time I would peel out. And so it didn't take long before you could hear me coming because one of the wheels had a flat side.
Small plastic.
I loved the streamers on the handles.
That, like, yeah.
Did you guys yep. have those with the
I
little plastic streamers too?
I think those came off
too?
Of the one, because my best friend had one. I didn't have one. And she lived in an apartment complex, which meant we had a giant parking lot to dangerously careen from one end to the other. And nice. I don't remember those streamers, but it's entirely possible that they fell off or something.
For those who don't know, in the 70s, molded plastic was a common, like a staple of toys. And
the
great
carbon-
thing about...
The carbon of toys. It
yeah,
was where
the great
all of
thing
them
about
came from.
Molded plastic was it really could be any color, including lots of bright colors. So you would have, sometimes you would have variety. There would be like the one that everybody knows is red and blue or whatever, but they could be like, oh, it's the G.I. Joe one and it's green, because it's really just extruding a different color of plastic. It's not that big. Yeah.
Yes.
And it lasts, and it's not painted, so the paint doesn't come off. It's just right. that plastic forever, even as it wears. Okay, the big wheel, chosen by Chip specifically. Monty, your turn.
You are, let's say, 8 or 9. You are in your grandmother's house, which is in Michigan, which is a state you do not live.
Story checks out so far.
You want something fun to do because all mm-hmm. of the adults are ignoring you. And you find this device. It's red plastic and has a button on it. And that's the controls. And in front of the button is a obelisk sort of thing that just rises up, and it's full of water. And there are these rings inside it, and you push the button, and a little jet of water shoots out and moves the rings. It's called a waterfall, and I loved the waterfall ring toss. I was so good at it because I
was
left alone for so long.
I had the one where if it had like a swordfish, so you had to get the rings on the swordfish, and as you pumped and the air went up through the water, it would make the swordfish go back and forth, which made it even more challenging.
Yeah.
Oh, I love those. Tomy made cool toys. Yeah.
And for me, it's a visceral memory. You press the button and there's this swish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Swish. I can feel the way that those buttons felt, because you could.
Yep. I used it so much. I got so good at it. I would like, because there were these two poles and the rings were different colors. Right. So you would like pump the button quickly to get a little swirl going. And then once the ring you wanted was on top, then you would push it hard and it would go out. It was a real skill-based game. I loved it. Hours of quote fun, unquote.
I mean, you laugh, Monty, but I swear we've been dancing in nostalgia all night, but you just weaponized it for me. Those things were all over the place when I was a kid.
Oh yeah. Dentist waiting rooms, doctor's waiting rooms. Yep. Oh yes. That's always where we saw them.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. And it was a toy in the truest sense of the word, because you could win, I guess, but like it was just a thing to pass the time. There was no It didn't do
there's
anything.
There's no learning. You're not making anything to eat. You're just sitting there doing this.
There's no chocolate cake at the end of
sort
a
of like
round
a puzzle.
Of swordfish swishy things. Yeah.
Well, it became a challenge. Like, could you get two of the same color onto the spindle? Or could you get all of one color on the spindle without getting the rest? And you made up your own games.
Yep.
Absolutely. That's a good one. Wow. That brings back memories. That's incredible, Monty. Good job.
Thank you.
Wow. Phil, it's your turn.
You know, we're all talking about tonight toys that we either had as a kid or admired as a kid. I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm going to go with toys that I was denied as a kid, because my parents may have been Lutheran, but when it came to gift giving and toys, they adopted a very Buddhist approach to life. So,
oh, poor Phil. Oh,
no. Everybody else goes with love, and Phil goes with resentment.
Yes, no, very much so. Thank you.
On brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, extremely so.
In the third grade, I had a friend. He was vaguely European. Really loved soccer, and he showed me a catalog once for a toy. I bet no one will know what this is, but our British listeners of a certain age will know. It's called Sabutio. Sabutio, the tabletop football game or soccer. And you have little figurines, and they have brightly colored soccer shirts. And there was a ball that was actually bigger than the players. And you would use the little players to kick it down the green felt pitch. And oh boy, you know what else you could do? You could order parts to make your own Sabutio Stadium. And I have never known covetousness until I saw those stands that you could link together. And they even made little light standards that you could put in your stadium. There was a scoreboard, and you could press a button, and the crowd would chant Sabutio, Sabutio, which is like building a baseball stadium and having the crowd chant baseball. But still, I wish that I had a Sabutio set, and I did not, and now I would like one, so please give me my Sabutio.
All right. It became a letter to Santa in there, in the middle.
Yes.
I have never heard of this thing.
I spelled it in the chat for Jason's needs doing the show
no
notes.
Idea.
And you can go to sabutio.com.
Yeah, you can.
In fact, the iconic table football game has been reborn.
It's a little bit disappointing. They don't have quite the accessories they had back in Sabutio's heyday.
Whoa, hold on. They have a VAR TV, man. They have a VAR TV. This is cutting edge toy work right here, if you ask me.
Sabutio never went out of style.
Clearly.
Vaguely European, Phil. I have questions
vaguely
about
European.
That. He was from away, is what you're saying, but you don't really know where.
And Phil led with, I had a friend in third grade, and I went, well, it's good that he had one.
Yeah, he was the little Italian kid, maybe? I don't know.
He's vaguely European.
Spanish? I don't know. It's
what was his name?
Vaguely European.
Tony. His name was Tony.
Tony. Okay. Mm-hmm. That doesn't tell us anything. That's just Americanized.
Tonino Wananoi, you fan of Inter Milan.
I remember Sabutio. I knew
of
someone
course.
Who had a catalog like that because they were like, I want this too. Never saw one in person.
No.
But years later, every time I heard Phil Collins' Sabutio, I just sang Sabutio instead because
there's a toy that's been on my mind all the time.
Phil Collins' parents also would not get him a Sabutio set.
Right?
They wanted to build Sabutio. A little stadium.
That song makes so much more sense now.
Whoa. Right on their front page, it says Sabutio is a classic table football game which remains high popularity over the world.
Played by vaguely European children everywhere.
Yes.
Wow. Sabutio, it's great. I've never heard of it before. I love it. I love everything about it. I love actually
this
my favorite part, Phil, my favorite part is the detail where the ball is much larger than the players.
It is very much larger.
Just imagine
than the players.
if soccer, you're like an American and you're like, I've heard that people love this football that's not like American football all around the world. And you tune in and it's like a bunch of people chasing an earth ball around, right?
Yes, it is one of those balls that you crawl into to fall down the
absorb.
Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. You also had to get separate players to do throw-ins and corner kicks. It's fantastic.
Wow.
Mm. Amazing. Annette, it's your choice now.
It is. I got sniped the first choice, but I was confident.
Big fan of Sabutio, are you?
Yes, I was. Phil, you did it just before. I was like, that was what I always longed for. No.
Annette really strikes me as a big Masters of the Universe collector.
I had Skeletor. Come on. My choice is from 1978. It is something not only did I have, but I still have. I found it in a box the other day, and I have arranged a play date with Erica because she had the exact
same set as I did. And most of you probably have never heard of this. It's fashion plates.
Oh my god!
Fashion plates so much.
Exactly.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Come on.
Of course.
We had those because we did costume design for the dolls.
Yeah.
So,
oh my god, you, David.
Fashion plates. I remember them too. I absolutely remember them.
So I still have my 1978 version. You have all these different pieces that are interchangeable and you can create. On the box, it says hundreds, thousands, even millions of fashionable combinations can be created. And it's sort of, you swap in different versions and then you flip over the little plat, because it is all still molded plastic. You flip it over and on the back, there's different textures that you can create patterns with. So, you know, you put that together, hours of fun that Erica and I will soon be having.
Gender norms and all of that. The Mighty Men and Monster Maker was the comparable version that was around.
Oh, yeah.
Targeted at me. And that was superheroes and creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like three across. So you would change the different three set and then you could rub it and it would go on a piece of paper. Yeah.
Kind of, because you have an option of three or two, because there was like the head, a torso, and then everything from the belly button down. Or they had a set of special blocks where it was like the head and a top. So you had a bunch of different permutations on that. Oh my god. And what, Annette, did you mention how if you flip them over, they have different textures on the back?
Yeah.
So you could put stripes,
create all the patterns
or floral patterns and intricately color them in that way. Oh, fashion plates are the greatest.
Yeah, I'm like, really? And they last forever because I still have it.
Yes.
Apparently so,
yeah.
Jeez. Fashion plates.
Oh, man.
That's a great one. And again, a thing that I actually do remember and have not thought about in a very long
time. It's so satisfying just to rub your pen or pencil or whatever that is and just see the pattern come out.
Right?
And like feel it kind of come up.
Think about how clever that toy designer was, right? They're like, okay, there's the effect where you have a rubbing, right? You have a piece of paper and then you could rub on it with a crayon or a pencil or whatever and a texture or a shape comes out. And then what if we build then a series of shapes that you mix and match and then you can generate that. And then you basically created your own thing. You can color it in and stuff and customize it further. Like just from a technical standpoint that somebody was a toy designer worked through all those details of like, how can we make the perfect toy and that will last until the 21st century and it's fashion plates. That's the answer.
Well, and they made many versions of it.
There was like a whole special holder for the black crayon that you used to like put the pattern on, and then you went to town with the colored pencils and everything else. Yeah, it was a whole thing. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to close out the first round. We will do at least one more round. I hope you've got more toys. I'm going to do the obvious thing that everybody expects me to do, and it's the Micronauts. It was my favorite toy as a kid. They were Microman figurines from Japan that were basically taken and remixed for the American market and the European market, I think, by Mego. I in a story not quite as tragic as David's, I did save some of those toys in a box that went in a barn that was destroyed by rats. So the ones that I chose to save, I didn't save. Although then later I found in a junk box in my house parts of a couple of Micronauts, because the whole idea was they were individual toys that were actually made out of interchangeable parts, so that like you could pop the head off of one and put it on a different one, or you have the big robot and you could put an action figure inside because all the parts lined up. You could turn a robot into a tank, all of these sorts of things. A lot of die cast plastic, some metal, mostly plastic, came in many colors, because once you've got the plastic molds, you can just have this guy's orange and this guy's blue and it's the same guy, but the color is slightly different, and collect them all, kids. And my friends and I in first grade or whatever were completely obsessed with those toys. And I have in the intervening years bought back some of my favorites on eBay. So behind me here, I have a Biotron and a Microtron, which were the big robots from that. And then somewhere I still have the, you know, most of the parts of a couple of my original Micronauts from back in the day. And that was in the heyday of Mego, which again, you know, then they went bankrupt. And several companies, by the way, because the Micronauts are cursed now, have tried to bring back the Micronauts as toys. Most of them, as a part of that process, then went bankrupt themselves. Aww. I guess don't try to make Micronauts, people. Don't do it.
A note of clarification, Jason. Was it the toys and the boxes were destroyed by rats, or the whole barn was destroyed by rats?
Oh, well,
I missed that detail.
The barn remains and is a key part of the Motherlode's leading wedding destination. People get married in that barn now. But at the time, that was a place that a bunch of stuff, including my beloved stuffed animals and all those things that were, that when I kind of went off to college, got put in a box. And then that box, yes, the entire contents of the box were apparently ravaged by rats, although that's what they tell me. As far as I know, it's possible my parents just looked at the box and went like, eh, and threw it away. But I think I'm going to choose to believe that it was the rats.
They're on a farm upstate. They're running around and playing.
Yeah, all my Micronauts are playing. They were all sold to little kids who wanted to play with Micronauts. Yeah. And it's great. They're playing. They're with David's Star Trek playset.
It's not as sad as the Star Trek one, but you know, Micronauts, the commercials were everywhere.
Yes, of course.
When I was little, and you know, I was like, ooh, these look really cool. And they'd show you all the, oh, you can take them apart. You can put them together and they have all these different tracks and vehicles and all this stuff. And I was like, I want Micronauts. And we hit the comic books. I could read the comic books.
Which survived long after the toys and the company that made them went out of business. The comic book continued.
And my grandmother bought me one Micronaut figure, and then we couldn't find them ever again. Yeah. So how sad is it to have one Micronaut?
You can't do anything with it.
It's
not sad at all. Do what I did. You integrate them into your Star Wars collection.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
He had other adventures.
They disappeared real fast.
But you couldn't combine them with anything.
And it had some... I think there was a thing there where like the company went out of business, and also the Star Wars stuff was all finally picking up speed. And so there was a real transition that happened there. Anyway, those were, I had two best friends in like first grade, and all
they
we
were
did.
Biotron and Microtron?
And they were time traveler. I know. And it was Crispin Holland and Brandon Baradas. And we would go over to each other's houses with armfuls of Micronauts. And then, that is childhood distilled for me. And so
was there a storyline or mythos that you were aware of when you were playing with them, or did you just go with it?
No, you're just making things up. There was nothing. There was maybe what was written on the back of the box, like this is obviously a bad guy or this is a good guy. Sometimes it was really unclear whether it was a good guy or a bad guy. When the comics came out, there were some characters who we thought were bad guys that actually the comics said were good guys. But at the time, we were just inventing it all on our own, which I was part of the, I think, delight of those toys, is that since they weren't a media tie-in, we really were just sort of free to invent who they were and what they were trying to do beyond like their names. That was all we had, what was on the box. A very different kind of a thing than most toys these days, I think, or in the last 40 years when everything's a tie-in, except for fashion plates and the big wheel. And Play School Bristlebox. Actually, we haven't had a lot of media tie-ins other than Skeletor. So that's pretty good. Good job, everybody, except Moises.
Sabutio is all media tie-in.
I suppose Sabutio is literally, it's all
of,
it's
Mr. Scott.
All of soccer. Oh, no, you're right. Mr. David. David distracted me with his tale of woe, but that's a media tie-in toy, David.
Oh, it's totally a media tie-in.
All right, okay. I take it all back. Round two, Shelly.
Here comes my villain streak, Jason.
Okay, good, great. Round two, Shelly, it's your choice.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well, inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
I was very excited when I made my lists to realize that I didn't have media tie-ins, because that is the way that I want to live my life, whether I actually do or not. And in any case, so 70s toy commercials, not to be confused with media tie-ins, are definitely important part of how one decides what's out there, what one wants, what one cries to their mom to get. And I remember the commercials of a fine company called Whammo, which produced water toys. And we love water toys down here in the South, where it gets hot in the summer. It gets hot in the summer a lot of places. But unfortunately, my mother never succumbed to our begging for water toys. But my neighbor's mothers did. And we had an empty lot next to our house, so they would bring them and play. And the toy of which I speak now is the Water Wiggle from Whammo, which is basically a weighted sprinkler with a head on it, so that when you turn it on, the thing whips around and it sprays water at you, and the head is alarming. And by the way, it was recalled in 1988.
You don't say. Most of those toys. I thought you were going to go slip and slide, but
That was a combo. The slip and slide and the Water Wiggle were a combo. Not in the sense of sold that way, but in the sense of wanting them. I was like, while you're buying us one, Mom, why don't you get us the Water Wiggle and the slip and slide? We had the slip and slide, but the Water Wiggle did not belong to us.
Extremely dangerous.
Extremely dangerous.
You could,
so fun.
You could, when you took a break, you could play some lawn darts, I guess. And
right.
Then go
exactly.
Back.
I think the Water Wiggle more dangerous than the slip and slide. The slip and slide could be dangerous. The lot next to our house did have quite an incline, and we would put the slide on the incline so that not only would the water move us along, but our little butts would, you know, gravity would help out as well. And no injuries recorded, but God, we had so much fun.
All right, the Water Wiggle. Moving on, wow. Lisa.
Oh my gosh. Picture it, Christmas 1978. There's only one thing I want. Only one thing in the whole wide world. I've actually seen it on TV commercials over at friends' houses. And when I finally unwrap it, it's magic. And it is the Barbie styling head.
Oh my God.
It was an uncanny plastic head and neck descending into a set of impossibly narrow shoulders, planted in a big pink tray. It came with a set of weird wax crayons that were supposed to be rouge and lipstick and eyeshadow. And there were curlers and a spray bottle and little purple plastic brushes and combs. And you could glam Barbie up. You could learn how to apply makeup. You could give her all sorts of hairdos. It looked magnificent on the box. And in practice, after half an hour playing with it, you had Nancy sponging on your hands. And I loved it passionately. It was the greatest toy in the world. Like, I ended up like using bristle blocks as hair ties.
Diane, call
was
back.
Was it bigger than a standard Barbie head or the same size?
It's bigger than a standard Barbie head.
It's like the size of a huge. Young,
it's gotta be, right?
A wee that's person's head. Yeah, it's,
yeah,
like,
it's like the size of a toddler.
Size.
It's basically like a toddler-sized head, and it's got the hair growing out of it. I'm sure someone at Mattel is like, children are stupid. They'll believe anything, because there's no way any of these curlers were ever going to make a dent in that magnificent tangle of crazy synthetic fibers that passes for Barbie hair. But it was so much fun to be like, I'm going to give her a curly updo like Cinderella and spend half an hour painstakingly winding the curlers and brushing everything out and bouncing off the walls and taking them out. And like, they would just kind of stick out like limp little corkscrews, and it's beautiful. I loved it. I loved it so much. And like I said, after any sort of play, it went from being this glossy haired, glamorous toddler head to Nancy Spungen Jr. And that just made it better, because like once their hair had crossed the point of no return, you and your friends could then like take magic markers or like the matches
cut
a friend had stolen
hair
from an older brother and your scissors and just go hot wild, turning her into a
town.
Monster.
Yeah.
And that's how you wind up with Kate McKinnon's Barbie.
It's like, you play too hard.
Kate McKinnon's Barbie was a glamazon compared to how the Barbie styling head looked by the time we were done. Like, we could have been tried at like the Mattel Hague Court for crimes against Barbie manatee for what we did to those things. But it's just so great. It was a chance to be like, this is almost the same size as I am. What if I were to do something like this? And you'd practice on the Barbie and it looked terrible and you had a great time.
Oh, the Barbie manatee. By the way, Barbie styling head, a product still sold. I mean, it's a new version of it, obviously. Still sold to this day.
I don't think they make a Barbie manatee.
We had the mid-70s version, which looked like, you know, your modern stereotypical Barbie. But we also had one from the mid-60s that was that early, very severe eyebrow Barbie.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Barbie changed with the times, really, but the styling head perseveres. Yeah. All right, Kelly, your choice.
Yes. Okay. So I feel like I'm more or less legally obligated at some point to make some sort of Star Wars reference. So I'm doing it here, but I'm going to come at it sideways. So all I ever wanted in life was Star Wars toys. And being not being a boy in the early 80s when people were buying Christmas gifts for me, I really never got Star Wars toys the way I wanted to. And so what ended up happening was still in the early 80s, I just don't remember exactly which Christmas it was. At some point, somehow, because my brother is 4 years younger than I am, and he 1 year got the Weeble Wobble Treehouse.
Oh.
And
Weebles
wobble, but they don't fall down. And apparently they can live in trees. And so after Return of the Jedi, once I had saved up money and all they had left at the pharmacy, which was the only place to buy toys in the wilderness when I was a child, we went to the pharmacy and I went to the back wall and they had one Star Wars toy. And I had saved up my money and I cashed in all that money on Chief Chirpa, one of the Ewoks from Return of the Jedi. And where, you may ask, did Chief Chirpa live? Chief Chirpa lived in the trees amongst the Weebles. That's what he had to do.
Is this a combo pick? An Ewok living among the Weebles in the treehouse?
Like, I kind of feel like
it is a show on Disney Plus.
It's kind of, you know, dances with Weebles. Like, you know,
Well, they do dance, the Ewoks.
Yeah, I mean.
Or did they just call them Tweebles?
Yep, yep. You know? So that was what, you know, because I had like my other set of Star Wars adventures was my parents would buy me Barbies, but I didn't want to play with them because they weren't Star Wars guys. So finally, at some point, somebody hipped my mom to the Star Wars, to the fact that you could get Barbie size Star Wars people. And so eventually she broke down and bought me Princess Leia. And so then immediately I played with all the rest of the Barbies too, because now Princess Leia just had a girl gang and then they would all create mayhem and they all blew up the Death Star themselves because I never got any of the others. I only ever got Princess Leia. Mm. And so like that was what passed for playing Barbie at my house when I was a kid, because I wasn't really interested in just the Barbies until Princess Leia was among them. So
that was the original treatment for Episode 7, Princess Leia's Girl Gang. But
I would watch that movie.
I mean, I would.
Be great.
Yeah. That would have been an amazing movie. Yeah. And I mean, Princess Leia is a huge part of who and why I am the person I am today. And so I was very, very excited about her. But before anybody told my mom that, you know, you can get Star Wars guys that are Barbie size and then we can all pretend everybody that it's all fine and that your daughter plays with dolls the way she's supposed to, which is what people thought at that point, I had Chief Chirpa and he lived among the Weebles in the Weeble treehouse. I think that's what it was called.
Yeah, Weeble's Treehouse. I looked it up. That's what it's called.
The straight up Weeble's Treehouse. Yeah.
Weebles were like little egg shaped guys. They were, and that's why they wobble, but they don't fall down. And then there was an Ewok.
They had a Winnie the Pooh treehouse as well, the Weebles.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
They don't fall down.
I remember that
slide. Was there a slide?
There was a slide in one of the treehouses. I had a friend who had the treehouse. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. And there's like a little swing that had a crank.
With the Keebler treehouse, like the Weeble treehouse and the Keebler treehouse.
Very different.
Bear some resemblance to one another. So
a little bit. Like, yeah.
I am going to treasure this thought of a Weeble treehouse with an Ewok living in it. Thank you, Kelly.
Well, eventually someone gave my brother an Ewok. And so then there were two Ewoks who could live amongst the Weebles. So
that's right. I love it. Moises, it's your turn.
Well, after being aggressed for daring to parlay.
I withdrew. Okay. I withdrew all aggression. Dave, it was all David's fault. I blame David.
Wow. Okay, fair. I'll accept it. I'll accept David's full blame.
As will I, actually.
That's fair. In preparing for this draft, a lot of thought went into, well, what angle do I approach from? How do I do this? I decided I'm going to stick with action figures, and because this is our festive event, the thoughts I have are drawn to my friends, the action figures, but also that in discussing things on this show and the various associated shows on the network, we can have people who pronounce Princess Leia that way, and people who pronounce it Princess Leia, like Grand Moff Tarkin did. and everybody is having a grand old time talking about all kinds of pop culture stuff. And sometimes some weird random bit of pop culture thing will be brought up, and inevitably, thanks to the massive advances in action figure technology, there exist action figures of these things.
Oh no.
And my thoughts are drawn to the monster cereals.
Oh no.
Because a company called Jada Toys out of City of Industry, California, has made a limited edition run of Boo Berry, Count Chocula, and Frankenberry action figures. And the Boo Berry one, which is my actual draft pick, not all of them. I'm not a monster like these monster cereal mascots.
So you're just drafting...
Just drafting specifically.
Boo Berry.
Boo Berry.
I have never been happier.
He glows in the dark. He glows in the dark.
What?
He glows in the dark, and he's $20.
It's so cool.
What?
Sounds like Peter Lorre, too.
So, like, I'm guessing everyone on your list is getting one of these. That's an amazing price point for a glow-in-the-dark blue
it's
cereal
so
mascot.
Cool.
I just found out yesterday I have to be part of a Secret Santa. I think I know what I'm getting.
There you go.
I'm wiping a tear.
Like 15 of these are just going to mysteriously appear at Shea Sudderth in the next month,
Colonel,
I feel like.
Colonel
right?
Sudderth. Wiped a tear as he wrote his letter to his dearly beloved wife. Christmas is saved, Miss Shannon.
Reference acknowledged.
All right. Boo Berry action figure. It's it's specifically been chosen. David, your turn.
Well, this I'm going back to the well of Christmas. And this is maybe you all know I love Star Trek, but this was maybe the best Christmas present I ever got. I think I was about 8, and we went up. This is when we were still with the museum, too. So we were only about 20 minutes from Disney World. And one of the big displays we had in the museum was a collection of about 350, 400 Madame Alexander dolls. And yeah. Of all the dolls, everyone is like, oh, wasn't it creepy living there? Only the Madame Alexander dolls were a little creepy. And, but, you know, this is near the end of her life. She wrote a memoir and did a book signing at the shopping village outside Disney World. And my grandmother's like, well, we have to go meet Madame Alexander.
No, you
all
don't.
Right. No, you really don't.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh, and
you
there
do.
Is a whole story about that. I'll tell you some other time. But. As part of that day, because it was a day-long event, there were all these events, too. And so my grandfather was like, well, I'm not going to sit around for this, and I don't think David's going to be all that interested either. So we went around and did stuff on our own. And we went to this toy store, because, of course, there's a toy store there, and I saw this bear. Turns out I had never heard of Paddington Bear at the time, but they had a whole display of Paddington Bears. And they were by Eden Toys. And I know that a lot of the traditional Paddington Bears either are in like dark blue and red coat and hat, or, you know, sometimes a black hat and a dark coat. These were all yellow hat and sort of a Robin's Egg blue duffel coat.
That's correct.
And, you know. With mm-hmm. The tag, you know, please look after this bear.
Mm. Yeah.
And
that's the way you find him in the duty-free shops coming in and out of Canada.
And I mm-hmm. just, I fell in love with him. And, you know, I'm 8. I have no idea. I never really got into Winnie the Pooh. But this, you know, there was something about the look of this bear. And I don't know how they did it. I don't know how they communicated because we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have texts. We didn't, you couldn't do any of that. And on our way home, because this was right around Christmas time, on our way home, they surprised me by giving me the bear. And I have him to this day. He was my lovey all through, you know, when I was 8 and 9 and 10. He is still sitting on my nightstand today, and he's in pretty good shape, all things considered. So yeah, the 1979 edition by Eden Toys of Paddington Bear.
All right. Thank you very much.
Outstanding.
Specificity.
Chip, your choice.
All right. Continuing with specificity. I was big into Star Wars toys, obviously. But one of my favorite Star Wars toys was one of the few that I had that was for some reason at my grandmother's house, not my own. She lived across the street. It was easy enough to get there. But for some reason, I kept the 1979 Kenner Star Wars Droid Factory at my grandmother's house. It's one of the more obscure Kenner Star Wars toys. It is part of the 3 3/4 inch collection of things. And what it was this big plastic playset, kind of a tray kind of thing with a crane in it and pegs for your Star Wars action figures. But it was a bunch of it was a tray full of legs and wheels and sensors and rubber pegs for connecting, and it was how you could build your own wildly not canonical, never appeared in the movies, droids, except that if you followed the instructions carefully to to use all of the pieces to complete 5 droids, one of them was an R2-D2. And it was the only way that in the 1970s and 80s, it was the only way that you could assemble an R2-D2 and scale with your other action figures that had 3 legs. The Kenner Star Wars toys were, you know, wonderful. I was desperately afraid that somebody was going to choose the whole line. I wanted to get this obscure one in, though. It was an assembler toy of, it was a construction toy, and it gave me my 3-legged R2-D2.
I love it. This is what killed the Micronauts, Chip, clearly. or I could restate it. It probably scratched the exact same itch that the Micronauts did in terms of assembling and mixing and matching toys. It's great.
But unlike the Micronauts, they weren't afflicted with a witch's curse that doomed all the companies. All
those companies made lots of money.
Everyone.
I don't know, though. Maybe I was subtle. Maybe for some reason I thought that they had a witch's curse, which is why I made it stay at my grandmother's house instead of my own. Who knows?
No, it just gave you something to do at grandma's house. Yeah, exactly. It makes it special to have that toy there. Grandparent house toys is a thing, people. Let me tell you.
Yeah, that's a whole separate draft. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Really,
oh, it's a whole separate draft.
I have a story about that, but well, I'll say it.
Story for another time. Monty, your choice.
My waterfall was a grandparent's house toy, and so was this one. Mm-hmm. But first, in 1933, Werner Heisenberg gave a speech. And one of the people listening to that speech was a Dane named Piet Hein. And Heisenberg apparently just said, and a cube, you can divide it into smaller cubes. And Piet Hein said, huh. And I guess he was not listening to the lecture at this point. He's heard of doodling. And he came out with these basically...
Werner Heisenberg dolls. You touch them in the stomach and they say things.
No. I'm uncertain about that. Anyway, Piet designed what are essentially 3D Tetris shapes is the easiest way to describe them. And he called them a Soma cube. And it rules. Basically, it's 7 shapes. There's one shape that's 3 cubes in an L. And then there's shapes that are 4 cubes connected in different ways. And you can make them into a 3x3 cube or make them into other shapes, and they're so fun. I found these at my grandmother's house and was obsessed with them for an entire week.
My grandparents had, I'm looking it up, my grandparents totally had these two. Those are awesome.
They're so much fun. I promise. Mm-hmm.
Weren't Soma cubes what they ate in Brave New World?
Also, sure. Yes, also that.
Those are Soma capsules, perhaps. Oh, or liquid Soma. Liquid
cubes
Soma.
Are people.
They're people, I tell you. They're people.
Soma cubes are people.
Referencing another incomparable episode. Phil, it's your choice now. Thank you, Monty.
So you've just finished your game of Sabudio. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sabudio.
Easy to say. Sabudio. You've worked up a man-sized thirst or a kid-sized thirst. You pushing that giant ball around.
Mm-hmm.
I want a ding-dang snow cone, and I want it to come from the Snoopy snow cone machine that I never had.
Yes, you do.
Oh, yes.
I also didn't have one.
Yes. You got Snoopy on top of his doghouse. You lift Snoopy out. There's a little hole. You put in the ice cubes. You put Snoopy back in. You grind up the ice cubes. They come out into a little cup. And then you use a flavor thing. And I imagine these must taste like the most delightful thing on earth. Whenever I go to a restaurant, when I go to a restaurant and they bring out dessert and there is not a Snoopy snow cone on the menu, I say, well, what a disappointing meal this will be. And
you sound fun.
So, Snoopy snow cone machine. Snoopy, I would like that too, please.
That would be the dessert after you get your cake from the Easy Bake oven,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
It's your palate cleanser.
Right.
There you go.
Well, I guess the Easy Bake cake would be a dessert. Well, we're going to do like a cornbread or something that's a little bit lighter for the Easy Bake.
We are not.
And I don't know.
Chocolate. Period.
It's all desserts all the way down at this restaurant. Annette, it's your turn.
Okay, so you know when it's Christmas and the biggest present under the tree is for you, and it's going to be a very good Christmas, and you open it up and it's everything you ever wanted. It is the Barbie Star Traveler motorhome, which has been alluded to, but not picked.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm old enough that this was yellow. It was not pink as much Barbie stuff is now, but it had little drop down beds that you could put up and down. It had like a little patio set you could set up around or on top of the motorhome. And you know, I, unlike Kelly, I am a Barbie girl. I'm such a Barbie girl. So I love my Barbies for a very long time. And I loved this motorhome for ages. It was very good.
I did have the yellow one. And it just, many years later, it just made Spaceballs extra hilarious to me. Because this was the only thing I had that would hold a bunch of Barbies and also Princess Leia at the same time. And to go off and have adventures. And mine was also the big yellow one.
Yeah, classic.
I think vehicles are my fondest Barbie memories. Most of the Barbie stuff was my sister's. She had I think I had a Barbie camper and a Barbie beach bus, and she had like the dream house and most of the dolls. But we'd put the Barbies and the G.I. Joes together and we'd ride them around. Mm-hmm. We had the camper, which had a little tent in the back, and we had the beach bus, which had little camp chairs you could sit on. We had all sorts of adventures. The Barbies would sit in the back. There was a fold-out flap in the back that had a little sink so you could like pretend that you were calling people for dinner and then everybody would show up and you'd have a meal on my twin bed or my sister's twin bed. It was fun.
Yeah, I'm realizing that what happened, and now I realize this, is that Tonka, feeling left out, made a metal Winnebago that was the right scale for Barbie and Star Trek toys, of course. And sold it, I think, without the license. Maybe it was not a Barbie. It was a Winnebago, is all. So they got the Winnebago motorhome license, very important for toys, because the official Barbie motorhome was a yellow plastic motorhome. That's this one that Annette's picking. So
right. Entirely I think at the time they were still separate companies. So yeah, it would have been.
Yeah, I think
unrelated.
That was a but you can see the meeting where it's like, oh, these kids got these dolls. Let's make a motorhome for the dolls, but we won't pay for the doll license. We'll just make a motorhome that's the right size.
Tonka toys were very much heavy duty, though.
They
whereas
were.
Barbie toys were very plastic.
Yeah, that was a serious Winnebago.
I had a Tonka fire truck that you could actually plug into your water hose in the backyard. And it was
sounds
really
amazing.
Heavy duty and full, all made of metal.
It puts out the Easy Bake Oven
the Barbie
fires.
How'd you know? And then the Barbie ones were all sort of plastic and vinyl and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that Winnebago is pretty amazing.
It's pretty awesome, right? But I mean, yeah, but not unbranded.
I would have been really happy with that
Winnebago branding. Yeah, you know, there's like a there's like a shower in there. You know, Kevin Kirk can rinse off after a day at climbing mountains.
A busy day.
Yosemite.
Fighting Gorn.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I will end the second round with my pick, which is I was racking my brain, and then suddenly I thought, what was a toy that I was obsessed with, that I was completely obsessed by? And people may not remember this, except the people on this panel who obviously will, that often what you would get is like, it was a toy that you could only get if you collected like box tops or other kind of credits, and then you mail it in, and it would always say that it would be 8 to 12 weeks for delivery.
Yeah, yeah, like mm-hmm. Wondar, the Wonder Bread exclusive mail order Masters of the Universe.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, because I looked this up, this was the summer of 1977, so I was a six-year-old kid, and 8 to 12 weeks for delivery is like your whole life passing by waiting for this thing. Mm-hmm. So when I purchased, and I looked this up, it was a collection of cereals that you needed to get the box tops from, including Trix. And I forget one of the other ones that I also would get cereal of, but I'm informed
Apple Jacks, Corn Pops.
Yeah. But the Monster cereals were also available. I did not get the Monster cereal. Oh, Count Chocula. Maybe?
So it was General Mills then.
Yeah. Yeah. You could send in 5 or 6 or whatever proofs of purchase from cereals. And in 8 to 12 weeks, you would receive the 1977's finest, the Battlestar Galactica Mail Away Space Station Kit, which promised you essentially a Battlestar Galactica themed Viper cockpit, so you could have your own adventures flying a spaceship through the power of imagination. And I waited 8 to 12 weeks. It was the longest 8 to 12 weeks of my young life. I just, every day it was like, did I get anything in the mail? No, you did not get anything in the mail. But eventually it came. It's in a envelope, because it's just paper. But it was two kind of like cardstock things that you could fold together that made like the cockpit of the Viper. And then there was also an instruction manual, but the assembly instructions were on one page. There's a YouTube video that actually takes one of these and puts it together. But you could... the rest of the manual was very cleverly, like, you could log like planets you visited in your spaceship. It's very cute, very adorable. Mm-hmm. And then there were like little cards that were like missions. So it was like a little prompt for your adventure imagination, where it would be weirdly shaped because it was Battlestar Galactica. So nothing had right angles. It was all like triangles and things. Where you could be like, investigate this planet or go look for this star or whatever. But it was, again, trying to get the imagination. I will say, for a thing that I had to wait 8 to 12 weeks for, and it seemed like forever, and then you get it, and it's literally just some things made out of heavy paper. I remember
the same cereal
it.
Box you cut up to mail away for?
I mean, basically, yeah. I remember... we had a box. We had like a big box that like an appliance came in. And I remember going outside into the box with the console and putting it in there. And then that was my spaceship and having many adventures. And isn't the imagination of a six-year-old kid amazing? Is really what I'm here to say. Bad on patience.
Are you drafting your own imagination?
Great
Jason.
On imagination. I am drafting the Battlestar Galactica mail-away space station kit. 8 to 12 weeks for delivery. It was amazing.
Can you also draft the box?
But amazing.
The appliance boxes?
And the cardboard.
Because,
yes. Yeah. And a cardboard
box. Because
those
boxes were amazing.
A cardboard box to put it in.
Yeah.
To fly it. Right. Exactly. That was the chassis of the spaceship. That's my choice, believe it or not.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Okay, we're going to go around very quickly one last time. If you've got, if you want to list more than one thing, you can, but you just got to do it real fast. So consider this a bring out your dead round if you want to. Please, very quickly, because we've been doing this for quite a while, but I would like to hear a little bit more about toys that you want to remember. Shelley.
Sorry, I have more than one, but my theme was toys I wanted but did not personally own. And then it came out to toys that were somewhat dangerous. So I'll combine the two in Bring Out Your Dead. I really wanted the Barbie Dreamhouse my sister had. I really wanted the G.I. Joe helicopter my best friend had. I really wanted the creepy crawler workshop that David almost sniped before by mentioning it randomly. And then I also... Then I also wanted the Matchbox parking garage with elevator that my best friend had.
Oh,
yeah. I remember that.
That thing is cool.
It was so good.
Yeah. With elevator.
Ramps. Ramps.
Yeah. Mm. Pretty sweet. Pretty sweet. Lisa.
All right. I guess my unintentional theme was toys that brought me a tremendous amount of joy, even though objectively they're kind of dorky. The latest is the Crayola Caddy from the 1980s, which was this magnificent Crayola yellow plastic. Extruded plastic thing on a Lazy Susan, and you could neatly organize by rainbow your tempura paints and your watercolors and your crayons and your Crayola markers, and then just sort of whirl them around and do gorgeous, you know, multimedia type art projects when you were stuck at your grandparents for a week during Thanksgiving. I loved that thing in a way that is probably all out of proportion to how much fun it actually is. That is my bring up my dead.
That's fair. Kelly.
I had Crossbows and Catapults, which was a game that I deeply, deeply coveted and actually ended up being available the following Christmas, and somehow I ended up with one. And you had a tower, like a little piece of a castle turret, and then a flag on top, and then it was up to you to build the kind of wall that you wanted. And then each person had a rubber band powered catapult and a rubber band powered crossbow, and you had these little discs, and like one side was red and one side was blue, and then you shot yours at the other person and tried to knock the flag over. And my brother and I played so much of that game. It was super duper fun, and I remember that one
also probably
vividly
had,
because
put people's eyes out and they needed to do a warning.
Probably. Like, we never ended up doing that. That wasn't ever how my brother injured himself with any toys. But it was another one where the commercials were inescapable, which is probably a huge part of why I wanted one so very, very desperately. I also had Micro Machines, specifically Battlestar Galactica.
All right.
Micro Machines, because those were super duper awesome, even though I don't know that I was necessarily the target demo when those actually came out, because they were for the new iteration of Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, sure.
But I also had the ones from the 90s that were the Star Wars ones, where you would get like the Death Star, you know, on the outside, but you would open it up and it would be something different inside. And some of those were pretty cool. Like, there was like a Bantha that like opened up and was a different thing inside. And so some of those were super fun. And I think I still have some of those in a box. And my last pick was my introduction to it's weird. It's inexplicable, but also adorable, and from Japan. And so this started my sort of low-key obsession with all sorts of adorable but unexplainable Japanese things. And that is Manchichi.
Oh, so soft and cuddly.
With the song. And it sucked its thumb.
Hey, all those stories about how advertising controls children's minds. It's true,
it
man.
Totally
it's
true.
It totally does.
100%.
Play back the last 15 seconds of this podcast.
Oh, yeah, they do.
If you don't believe it.
Like, decades go by, I won't have seen an ad, and I'll catch it on YouTube and go, oh, my God.
So I'm telling you,
the
70s toy commercial reels on YouTube are the best. I
mean, they came correct. Like, can you sing a jingle for a toy now? You can't. I will also point out that you can still buy a Manchichi to this day. So that was sort of the bonus of that pick, is that you can still get one of those weirdo little dollies super soft, you know, but hard, also hard plastic.
You know why you can buy one today? Because with his thumb in his mouth, he's really neat, and it's fun to fiddle with his tiny little feet.
See? Our parents weren't wrong. It'll rot your brains. Our brains are all rotted. Okay.
It really, really
Thank
will.
You, Kelly. That was amazing. Moises, what do you have left?
If you bring out your dads, had I had a proper third pick, it was brief. Probably my most controversial thing I'm going to pick yet, because it comes from a toy line that I have derided, many people have derided, that fills landfills in this country, in many other countries, I'm sure. And it comes from the world of Funko Pop, which...
Oh, no.
I don't love the aesthetic. I don't love the aesthetic. I don't love the aesthetic. But here's the thing. I was listening back to a few episodes of The Incomparable, and I had that urge to go and buy a piece of toy representing a favorite piece of media. It comes from the world of the Muppets. As Monty has noted, it's important to note which snouth you're referring to when you're referring to a snouth. Funko Pop made a snouth pop 10 years ago. You know how much you can buy it for aftermarket on Walmart.com? $387.
Oh no.
It is it has never averaged less than a $50 price tag, but at its low, you could get them for $8. So my third pick was gonna be the Snouth Funko Pop. In the spirit of a toy that I wish I had that I didn't get to have. So that's my trilogy of Incomparable related toy picks.
Thank you.
Incomparable adjacent. I guess related. I just listed a couple little things. Over Christmas last winter, my girlfriend and I had an incredibly great time putting together the Lego BD-1 Star Wars set. BD-1 Ooh. Is a droid that comes from the Lego, or not Lego, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor games, who is one of the great Star Wars droids. Trust me, you would love him if you love Star Wars droids of any kind. He has a little drawer that pops out of his head that you can hide stuff in. It's great. Similarly, as we speak, here in the US, Target has an exclusive collab set with Lego and Super Mario Brothers. It's a piranha plant in a green pipe, and it's great. And you should grab them before they go for collector's prices. I mentioned the big advances in action figure, you know, face likeness and that sort of thing. A couple of my favorite recent Marvel Legends line figures. I have Jimmy Woo from WandaVision, and he actually looks like the dad from Fresh Off the Boat, not the dad from Fresh Off the Boat, you know, like put through a washing machine or something. similarly, I have a classic Loki that looks like Richard E. Grant did playing him in Loki season one.
Oh,
and
man.
You can still readily get this thing. Like it's $25. Go get it. It is one of the coolest things. Okay. And then the other thing they've started doing with the Marvel Legends line is they've broken them out to sublines. So they have a Spider-Man line, and they did a series of Across the Spider-Verse figures that, again, they're like $25. And I'm never going to spend the hundreds of dollars those hot toy things cost. But they are incredible quality compared to what I grew up with. And you can get Spider-Punk and Spider-Man 2099 aftermarket, but as I understand it, they're going to another production run with them. But in addition to those, they've also done a run of X-Men 97 figures based on the X-Men animated series from the 90s that is coming back with a revival next year. And those are being readily restocked.
Lisa, don't tell Phil, but that means that you could get a Gambit action figure for him.
I'm going to tell you what, Gambit right here on my desk, Cher, right next to a giant-sized man thing.
I assumed Gambit was the Phil Hartman of this draft. We were all
Everybody gets a Gambit.
I remember when there were Gambit action figures where the trench coat was a sheet of plastic wrapped around a toy.
Amazing. All right. Thank you. David, what's left?
Well, in the toys that I always wanted as a child, the Play School Gilligan's Island floating playset for the bath. I don't know why. I just wanted that when I was really little. When Star Wars hit and all my friends had Star Wars action figures, I said, I want Star Wars action figures. And my grandmother went again Christmas shopping and wound up getting me a full set of Battlestar Galactica action figures, which were somehow less interesting. But as part of that, they did get me the Colonial Scarab, which was had wheels that like drove on a planet supposedly, but it was one of the missile firing toys, and they managed to get it before they were all recalled.
Right. Oh,
so that was
kind of
wild.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, Battlestar Galactica had the Viper that would shoot and a Cylon thing and the wings would fly off it.
There were a bunch of Micronauts, too, that were right in that era where they had the things that fired, and then if you bought it too late, the things would not fire. They would stick out, but then they would not go any further because of choking hazards, you know, because five kids died or something. I don't know.
And I did have the Fisher-Price Sesame Street playset with the classic style Fisher-Price figures that you can't get anymore because they do the wide, weird-looking ones. Mm-hmm. But my favorite strange, again, very specific, and it is a tie-in. I had the Space 1999 Moonbase Alpha playset with the, quote, intelligent talking computer, and then action figures of Martin Landau, Barbara Bain, and Barry Morse, which... Those are weird actors to have action figures.
Yeah,
I would say.
And
kids get enough of that Martin Landau.
Martin Landau, man. But they were literally Barbie sized. But it was all first season figures, and that's when the second season where they changed all the look of it and killed off Barry Morse, and it was hard to play with after that.
I want to play Mr. Leonard in North by Northwest. I want to play Mr.
I was going to say, I prefer
the
Martin Landau in Crimes and Misdemeanors action figure.
Great
classic.
He just sits there and mourns about mortality.
Yep. Yeah.
I was going Ed Wood, Bela Lugosi, but you know, either way.
More like an inaction figure. All right. Thank you, David. Those were... Exactly as expected, but great. Chip.
But great.
Yeah, I mean, like, David's going to pick, you're not going to believe this, Space 1999 and Gilligan's Island. Of course he is.
Of course he is.
But I enjoyed it.
No Chip. Barnaby Jones action figures?
Someone's got to be making
Columbo
those.
Action figure?
Was there not a Super Train? Come on.
I think
Kolchak the Night Stalker with action hat
didn't last long enough.
No, David sent away for the 8 to 12 weeks to get the fish figure from the Barney Miller set.
Oh man,
that was the longest summer ever.
You can just get him to walk to the bathroom and back.
But he was just paper.
Yep.
Yeah.
He was just paper though.
Chip.
All right. One description of a toy that is absolutely not nostalgic, except it is. When I was a kid, this is a deep cut for people who listened to the Voltron Legendary Defender stuff on the TV channel, but when I was a kid, I wasn't into the Lion Voltron. I was one of those weirdos who was into Vehicle Voltron.
Weird. Yeah! Such a weirdo.
Vehicle Force!
Yes!
Bandai has a line of very expensive adult collector giant robot toys called Soul of Chogokin, if I'm pronouncing it right. And they came up with one for Vehicle Voltron, a.k.a. Armored Fleet Dairaga 15. And it is way expensive. It is unlike any of the Vehicle Voltron toys of my youth in that it is actually poseable. I spent way too much for it, but it is absolutely feeding my childhood nostalgia and... Voltron stands over my MacBook with his sword protecting me even to this day.
I joke about the Vehicle Force thing, but I had those original Vehicle Force toys, and you're not wrong, man. You tried to pose that thing. You're just trying to make it fall over.
Exactly. Right. Rapid fire dead. The 12-inch Kenner Star Wars action figures, specifically Darth Vader and R2-D2, which were just absolutely unlike the small action figures. These actually resembled the figures. Also in figure land, Character Options Doctor Who action figures. There's a real long line of those 5-inch suckers with real deep cuts for the modern and the classic series. I have spent a lot of money on them.
Transformers, my son, my brother was 4.5 years younger than me, so I benefited greatly from toys that I was supposed to be too old to play with. Transformers Jetfire from 1985, which was actually a remold of a Japanese Robotech toy. It had spring-loaded landing gear that hurt your fingers. Doesn't matter. Light Bright.
Oh, Light Bright, things with light.
Light Bright. That was on my list. I love
We started with incandescent bulbs. We're ending with incandescent bulbs.
Right.
Used them to make all kinds of spaceship control panels.
And they used it to make the entire set of Larry King Live. So, yeah. every kid who grew up in the 70s would look at Larry King Live and be like, look, Light Bright.
Light Bright.
That's there were a lot of things I expected. I did not expect a Larry King.
Larry King. Light Bright. It's Light Bright. Yeah. If somebody said to
Light
me,
Bright.
Toy Draft, Larry King, and I'd be like, oh, Light Bright.
Toledo, you're here.
Yeah, that's right. You're on with Light Bright.
I'll take my answer off the air, Larry.
Continuing the 70s construction toys theme, Puzzle Town, adapted from Richard Scarry's Busy Town.
Ooh.
All those Richard Scarry characters like Huckle Cat and Lowly Worm.
Mm-hmm. Goldbug.
Lowly Worm, king among worms.
Mm-hmm. So you, plastic bases and thick cardboard walls and plastic roofs and egg cars and donut cars and apple cars. My childhood. And finally, the Spock helmet.
Oh, the Spock helmet.
Oh, yeah.
Greatest media tie-in ever. because they'd never seen Star Trek, but they had these helmets. So they put a sticker on it that said Spock.
And that Spock helmet, it's been referenced in comics and Lower Decks.
Yeah. It's canonized now.
It's been canonized.
Yeah. Which is bananas.
My headcanon when I first saw it was that he wore it a lot off screen in other scenes.
Exactly. Talking to Chekhov in season one, very far off screen. All right, Monty, what do you have left?
David, I think it was, that mentioned toys that shot things. Mm-hmm. So I want to briefly mention my favorite toy that I didn't have, the 2-foot-high Shogun Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
Where
The
fist would shoot out, and they were cool. Everything on these things would shoot out. Also, they now make a Skeletor Shogun Warrior.
One of my Micronauts friends, Brandon, he had the 2-foot-high Shogun Warrior, and it was awesome.
Whoa.
Those made you king of all toys.
Mm-hmm.
And the best toy I ever got as a child was the Star Wars action figure size Millennium Falcon. Oh, I remember opening that and just... Mm-hmm. Playing with it forever until my mother one day gave away all of my action figures. Also, you guys know these things. They're like 2 feet high. There might be a skeleton or like a dancer, and you push a button on the bottom and they collapse because there's strings in them. See, this is my problem. I like toys that are hard to describe.
I don't remember what they were. I just remember them.
We had a bird, a stork or something.
Yeah, I had one that was like a robot or something. And you press the little bottom of the base and it just collapses like it's
it just
made
fell
out
over.
Of... it's like
there were a bunch of them at the dime store where we'd shop. Like, they just all sorts of little characters. I think there were Disney characters and various other... And it was like not much fun after you did it a couple of times. So it was like, okay, I've seen him collapse.
Oh, I disagree. That's why I'm picking them. You could push them in different places and the strings would do different things. So you could eventually, if you spent a long time at them because your parents were ignoring you, you could learn to make it do a little dance.
Oh, wow.
I love Monty's stories and I agree with him. They were great.
Yeah. If you take enough time, they unfold. Okay. Phil, what about you?
Well, I could continue to talk about the things that I didn't get. Like,
but hey, Phil, you got that Gambit toy you're getting, so
it's going to be great. There is that. I didn't get the Millennium Falcon. I would have liked that to go with my other Star Wars stuff. I could have used Intellivision as a kid because I liked playing Pitfall when I went to my other friends' homes.
Pitfall was on the 2600.
Yeah, that was... 2600.
It was also on the Intellivision.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Look it up.
Okay.
Look it up. Mm-hmm. Activision. Your consoles.
They got to make their money.
It was
somewhere.
On both. Activision was loyal to no man.
No.
Somewhere Steve Lutz is shouting at the podcast, agreeing with you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But I want to talk about some of the things that I was favored with. I had the Play School McDonald's playset.
Yes.
Which was, oh, yeah.
Because,
you know. Those were cool.
They were cool. But who doesn't dream of.
The little trays and the.
Dream of, like, running your own little tables. McDonald's. And I had my grandmother gave me an ABC Monday Night Football truck.
Oh.
Okay.
Not a blimp. Yeah. But a truck.
No, the truck. The truck that would drive around and you...
anchors inside it so you could...
No, they didn't. This wasn't...
Did
this
she,
was
did
the
she pro- sing the theme song to oh, you man. When she gave it to you?
She did not. It was the production truck, so the anchors wouldn't have been sighted. Instead, it would have been like the director.
Rune Arledge action figure.
Yes. Chet Forty was inside directing the football and betting on games. And so... Yeah. And also, the... 1970s Pete Rose baseball score baseball game.
Whoa.
Because what child does not want to grow up worshiping Pete Rose? And this was a game my parents got me, and I still don't understand it. It was called Worm Wrestle, and it was a Parker Brothers game, and you had a little wrestling ring with a metal rod in the middle, and you had these metal multicolored worms, and you would bet on which worm was thrown out of the ring first as the thing spun around.
That sounds amazing.
Yes, Worm Wrestle.
Pete Rose would love to bet on the winning worm.
Guys, with your Rock'em Sock'em Robots, get all your pugilistic sports.
Oh, Rock'em Sock'em Robots. No, that's decadent. We're a wrestling place. Great.
We're a wrestling house.
Annette.
Okay. To continue the theme of things I wanted but didn't have, the Etch-a-Sketch. I know everyone had one except for me, I think. Yeah. More importantly, the Playmobil pirate ship. We had a lot of Playmobil. We had friends with the pirate ship, and it was amazing. Mm. I long for that. Mm. Something made in this century.
What?
The Lego typewriter, which I just got as a present from Nick, and it's amazing.
Oh, it's so cool.
Oh,
I love it so much.
And what is it? Is it modeled after like a Hermes 3000 or something?
I it probably Sorry, tells I'm me all the details.
Yeah. But it's a different podcast, the typewriter addict.
Yes. But you can press the keys and it makes things move and it's all very exciting.
Well, that's my Christmas list sorted.
I'm popping one in just because Chip reminded me when he said Big Wheel, we also had a GT Snow Racer, which is probably not relevant for everyone. But in Canada, if you had a GT Snow Racer, you were the coolest kid on Toboggan Hill.
Oh, wow. So it's like a tricycle, but it's got skis on it.
Yeah, it's got little skis and you sit on it and what? It has a steering wheel. And then like it has like two side skis and a front ski that steers. And it's pretty lethal because you can totally run over people and it had brakes ish. But yeah,
it was just a little lever down on the right.
Yeah, basically. you push with your foot and it might slightly slow you down as you run over someone.
That's what they refer to as the drift.
Yeah,
action is a lot more interesting on snow.
Mm-hmm. It's so fun.
All right,
my list.
I had two that were kind of like in contention to actually be picked. One is Phil mentioned the Intellivision earlier. The Atari 2600 itself, is it a toy?
Yeah,
I mean it is of a sort. My dad didn't want to buy it for us because he said he thought it would break the TV. Never really understood that. I tried to prove that it would not break the TV.
You'd have too much fun with the TV. The TV would get worn out.
Yeah.
Dad couldn't watch TV if you were playing on it.
We did end up getting one, and that was amazing. And but I also gave some thought to picking the Sears Roebuck catalog Lime Limo Go-kart, baby.
Oh, wow.
A chainsaw engine on the back of a cart that, speaking of toys that could kill you. When I was a kid,
it sounds
I
like a thing that can kill you, and then it's a different thing that can actually kill you.
When I was a kid, I got an electric scooter that I thought was going to be the most amazing thing in the world, and then we took it out on the driveway, and it went 1 mile per hour, and it couldn't get up the driveway. It like couldn't get up an incline, and I was so disappointed. But then I did eventually, at I don't know what age, probably an inappropriate age, got the Lime Limo, which you got from the Sears catalog, and it was a metal frame with wheels and a like Husqvarna chainsaw motor on the back, and I drove that thing in circles around our driveway because I lived down the countryside, so we had some space, and you could do go on the dirt part, and then you throw the brakes on and you kick up some dust, and as somebody who didn't get his driver's license until I was in college, I spent a lot of time driving that go-kart, let me tell you.
Well, now we know why you didn't get your driver's license until you were in college.
Yeah, I couldn't. It wasn't street legal. I couldn't take it with me to college, unfortunately. I'm now picturing me driving the Lime Limo around my college campus, and that would have been amazing, too. But I would have gotten in big trouble. It was great.
Was it in the toy section of the catalog, or was it elsewhere? Because
I don't know.
Tell you what, Chip. Here's how I treated that catalog. Everything in it was toys.
Everything was toys. Yeah. Anyway, the Lime Limo. It was green. Yes, it was. It was green. And then I had a couple others. In the Big Wheel inspired me to write down. I had friends who had the a hoppity horse, which was just a little inflatable rubber thing that you could bounce on. There was the hippity hop, but the hippity hop was like if they cut the head off the hoppity horse and there was nothing left but a ring to hold on to. It's much less exciting than the hoppity horse itself. And then in the more generic category, because these all actually delighted me at one time or another as a child, a bicycle, a basketball, and a football, but specifically a Nerf football.
I had a red and white Nerf football.
Nerf football.
I'm amazed we got this far in before Nerf was invoked at all.
Right.
Did you guys also have the weird kid in your neighborhood who bit a chunk out of Nerf footballs?
Yes. Yeah. I think it was a nutritional imbalance.
I have a name, Lisa.
That's fair. And that brings us to the end of this inaugural one time only, who knows, incomparable toy draft. I hope you enjoyed hearing about toys mostly from the 1970s. I guess it's just we're very Gen X here. And also Moises made lots of references to past incomparable things, which is great. A lot of us picked toys that we did not get because those are the ones that really stick with you, right? You get the one, you get them, and you're like, well, this is okay, but it's a little disappointing. But if you never get it, you know what? It never disappoints you. It lives in your dreams forever. just like their TV jingles, which we've established also live in your nightmares forever. Let me thank my guests one last time. Shelley Brisbane, Lisa Schmeiser, Kelly Gamont, Moises Chuyan, David J. Lohr, Chip Sutterth, Monty Ashley, Philip Michaels, and Annette Weirstra. And thank you all out there for listening. Happy holidays. I hope you enjoyed the toy draft. We will see you again with something completely different, probably, next time. Goodbye.